remember right, when that U2 album came out, the producer said the goal was to make it so that when you first played the record, your first reaction was going to be, what the heck's wrong with my speakers? I think he succeeded. News Talk 590 WVLK. Forensic Friday morning. Now, normally on Friday mornings, it would be Jack Patty and Ray Larson. But every once in a while, you just got to bring in the A-team. So I'm Scott Johnson, and Dan Laren from the Commonwealth Attorney's Office is with us this morning. We are brought to you by Landscaper's Corner at 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Landscaper's Corner has elite crown... Landscaper's Corner. I made it 3 whole hours without doing that. Landscaper's Corner has triple crown... 2, 3, 4. Landscaper's Corner has triple crown elite grass seed, the seed everybody's talking about, available in 5, 25, and 50-pound bags. Call 225-9433. Dan, good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning, Scott. I'm happy to be here again. I guess maybe the lunatics have taken over the asylum this morning. I brought with me Detective Franz Wolf and Assistant Commonwealth Attorney Andrea Mattingly-Williams to talk about a case that involved what we're calling the Craigslist robbery. Before I jump into it, I would be remiss if I didn't point out that he's not as cool as Billy Joel, but today is Detective Kevin Duane's 40th birthday, and I want to make sure the community is aware. Well, happy birthday, Kevin.
Well, there you go. Happy birthday, Kevin, and... I don't want to be you now.
Fair enough. He started it. Anyway, okay. this is a case that involves Craigslist, and I think most people are familiar with Craigslist. I have purchased a used video game several years ago. Met a stranger on Craigslist and bought a PlayStation 2 for $100. And it's a pretty common thing, but it doesn't always turn out the way you want it to. And in this particular case, it resulted in a couple of armed robberies and a significant... prison sentence for the criminal who used the Craigslist procedure to set up and rob a number of people in our community. So I guess the easiest way to start with this is to have Detective Wolf tell you about how this case came to the police department's attention and how they went about investigating and identifying the perpetrator.
Franz?
Okay, this is a case that occurred on March the 2nd of 2012, a little over, I guess, a couple of years now it's been. I was contacted. I was the on-call detective for the robbery homicide unit this day and was contacted by patrol officers in relation to them making an arrest on the individual that was ultimately found responsible for several Craigslist robberies. I was asked to come to the police department and interview the person that was identified as Jamori Russell. Shortly before Mr. Russell was arrested on the 2nd of March, there was a robbery that was committed on Winchester Road. The victim of this robbery had placed an ad on Craigslist to sell an iPad and the components that go along with this piece of electronics. And he, in response to the Craigslist ad that he posted, he was contacted by what ended up being Jamori Russell. A meeting was set between the two parties to meet on Winchester Road at a business. And once the victim arrived and presented the electronics, Mr. Russell produced a handgun and essentially stuck the handgun in the victim's face and demanded the iPad and the associated components. After receiving this property, Jamori Russell, or the person that was later identified as Jamori Russell, fled from the scene. The victim in this case reported this to the police in a very timely fashion, and there were several police officers that were in the area, began circulating the area looking for the described person or described suspect. Detective Scott Gibbons was in the area of this crime and located or observed a subject matching this description walking in the area of 5th and Race Street. And he contacted Patrol Officer Aaron Greenleaf. These two individuals are two detectives and attempted to make contact with Jamori Russell, and he took off running from them. He ran through some backyards and discarded an iPad and a handgun before he was apprehended by Officer Greenleaf. After he was arrested, he was brought to the police department, and at that time, Detective Gibbons and I conducted an interview of Mr. Russell about the most recent robbery, the iPad, and then some similar robberies that had occurred in the same area of town using Craigslist to contact the victim and ultimately set up the robbery.
So what other robberies was he directly linked to in this particular case?
Well, there was a robbery that had occurred earlier in the day on March the 2nd, and it occurred in a parking lot on Henry Clay Boulevard at a restaurant called the Lunchbox. The victim in that case reported to the police that, once again, he made contact with this, at that point, unknown purchaser of a, a respondent, I guess, to a Craigslist ad that he had posted for a PlayStation gaming system. The meeting was set to be made in the parking lot of the Lunchbox restaurant, and it was a similar situation where Mr. Russell responded, met the victim at that location, produced a handgun, and attempted to steal the Sony PlayStation from that victim.
And in the course of the investigation, what other information was developed that linked Mr. Russell to these crimes?
Well, it was none of his best work, I guess you would say. He was using his cell phone to make contact with the victims in this case that had posted the Craigslist ad. He was using his personal email address and telephone to contact these individuals, making it very easy to link the crimes back to Mr. Russell. And at the time of his arrest, I believe he had the cell phone that he had used to communicate with these victims on his person, and that piece of evidence was taken by the police department.
And what do you know about the recovery of the firearm that was used to commit these robberies?
When Officer Greenleaf was chasing Mr. Russell through downtown Lexington, again, he discarded this firearm. The foot pursuit continued. He was apprehended. They came back to the location where they saw him discard the firearm, and it was gone. But through a little more investigation, they located an individual in the immediate vicinity that had picked up the firearm. And after running that firearm, it was determined that firearm also had been stolen out of a vehicle here in Lexington a short time prior to these robberies being committed.
Okay. And so at the conclusion of the investigation, what were the charges against Mr. Russell?
Mr. Russell was charged with, I believe, two counts of first-degree robbery because he used this handgun to intimidate the victim in the process of committing a theft.
He was also charged with having a stolen handgun.
Okay.
All right, we're going to take a break and continue this case. If you've got questions or comments about it, we'd love to have you join us at 253-5959, star 590 on AT&T, 777-0590.
All right, well, we were winding up the investigation of this case. Detective Wolf, during the interview, did Mr. Russell indicate any other criminal activity or make any other statements that were useful to the police?
He did. During the interview that Detective Gibbons and I conducted, Mr. Russell was very standoffish in the beginning. However, when presented with the information against him in regards to the two robberies that he committed on March the 2nd, he ended up becoming truthful about the commission, his involvement in the commission of those two offenses, and ultimately provided great detail about how he committed those robberies and how he contacted the victims in an effort to set the robberies up. Also in that interview, it was Detective Gibbons and my opinion that Mr. Russell had not been caught simply for the first two robberies that he had ever committed in his life. So we began asking him about other crimes that he committed and due to our feeling that there were probably other instances of this type. And during this interview, he confessed to committing three other robberies where he had contacted victims that had posted ads on Craigslist and met these victims. And once at this meeting with the victims. He committed a robbery against the three of them. All three of these robberies also occurred in essentially the Winchester Road corridor, the same general location of where the two robberies occurred that he committed on March the 2nd.
But he was not charged with those crimes.
He was not. He was only charged with the two armed robberies that we previously discussed that he committed on March the 2nd of 2012.
So this guy found an M.O. that he apparently liked and stuck with it.
It did. It worked for him, and I'm not naive enough to think that he has not committed many more robberies of this nature. However, he did confess to the additional three that he committed prior to March the 2nd.
Okay. Well,
now, do you want to introduce our guest before we go to the...
I will. Preparing for the radio show... We reached out to some of the victims of Mr. Russell, and we have one of the gentlemen who was a victim of Jamari Russell's robbery. This will be a gentleman we'll identify as John today.
John, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning.
Morning, John. I wanted to ask you if you would explain basically what happened in this robbery from your point of view.
Well, I posted a PlayStation Portable on Craigslist, and he contacted me back and told me to meet at the lunchbox there on Henry Clay and Liberty. And so I showed up and backed in the parking lot. He did specify to park in the side parking lot, not the front parking lot.
Hmm.
I thought that was kind of odd.
Okay.
So when I arrived, he walks up to the truck, and he's like, "You got the PlayStation for sale?" And I'm like, "Yeah." So he's like, "Can I look at it?" I'm like, "Sure." So I let him look at it, showed it to him, and he's like, "Okay, what else you got?" And I showed him it had
I'm guessing there were some other games or some accessories.
Yeah, it was another little pack that I had, accessory pack, that's what it was.
Okay.
And he's like, "Okay." And he says, "How much?" And I said, "It was $250. And he says, "Okay," reaches in his pocket, and that's when he pulled the gun out.
And what was going through your mind when you saw that firearm?
Well, I was surprised, of course, stunned. And then I was like, "Well, great, this has actually happened to me."
How about that? So what did you do?
Well, at that point, he proceeds to reach in and grabs my phone off my leg that was in the truck.
Okay.
And then I looked at him, and I looked at the phone, and I reached up and grabbed the phone back, and then I said, "Okay, here, just take the bag and go away."
Okay. And did he?
Yeah, he took the bag, I got the phone back, and that's when I started the truck and just drove away.
Okay. What did you think about calling the police or notifying anybody else about this crime?
Well, I didn't call anybody until I got back to the got back home.
Okay. And what did you think about how the police handled the call?
They were great. Yeah.
Okay.
What about the outcome of the case? How do you feel like your justice was served? Do you feel like everything turned out the way it should have?
Yes. I do. I was pleased to hear that he got what he deserved.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Well, there you go. Thank you very much for the call today, John.
Thanks.
All right. If any of you have questions or comments, we'd like to hear from you as well at 253-5959, *590 on AT&T, toll-free 877-777-0590. We are going to take a break, get you caught. News Talk 590 WVLK. Scott Johnson in for Jack Patty on this Forensic Friday. Andrea Mattingly Williams and Dan Lehrin from the Commonwealth Attorney's Office are with us, as is Detective Franz Wolf. We are talking about the case against Jamari Russell, a Craigslist robber. Contacted people who had things for sale on Craigslist. Didn't follow the payment plan. when he got his merchandise on more than one occasion. So when we left the story before the break, Mr. Russell was in custody. He'd been charged with a couple of robberies, had confessed to a couple of others that he hadn't been charged with. Time for his day in court.
Well, eventually. Andrea Mattingly-Williams was the prosecutor in this case, and I'd like to ask her to explain how the case came to our office and the steps that it took in our lengthy journey through the circuit court.
Yes, this happened in March of 2012, and then our office got the case, and the case was assigned to me. When Mr. Russell was picked up and arrested, he asked for a bond reduction at some point, and over the Commonwealth's objection, because he was charged with two counts of robbery first, he was released from jail on a bond called a surety bond, where he basically, or a third-party bond, where somebody just comes and signs him out. While he was out, he committed a theft. Same basic MO, he contacted the victim on Craigslist. They showed up at a gas station on Winchester Road. When the victim got there, they had the jewelry or whatever they were selling. And Mr. Russell, at that point, grabbed the items and took them and ran. He did not have a handgun in this one. So the police were called. Mr. Russell came back to the scene a little later upon a call from the victim again, pretending like he had more stuff to sell. And the police were there waiting and apprehended him for the second time. So the case took a little while for the theft case to also catch up. That also came to our office. It was assigned to me. And so that case also had to be indicted. Then there was a series of motions and hearings that had to be held. They filed a motion to suppress, saying the police didn't have the right to chase him at either location, although they had descriptions and that sort of information about him. And then he filed a competency, saying he wasn't competent to go to trial. He clearly was competent to go to trial. And the case was finally set for trial, and maybe 3 days before, when it was clear that the offer wasn't going to change in the case, he pled guilty just a couple of days before trial.
So this case took about 2 years to get through the system.
Is that typical for this kind of a case? I know that, you know, one of the things that victims complain about, or victims' families complain about, is the amount of time it takes for a case to work through the system. For something like this, you would think it's a fairly cut-and-dried kind of thing, that it shouldn't take too long to work through the court system and get this guy either convicted or acquitted, whichever way it's going to fall.
Agreed. I mean, it is very frustrating, and particularly the victim of the stolen gun became very frustrated during this process because he wanted his gun back, and so it was very frustrating. It is not typical for a robbery case to take this amount of time, but his attorney kept filing various motions and things of that nature, and so for a robbery, it is not typical, but it's usually about a year before cases proceed to trial due to various motions that are usually filed by the defense.
The typical, well, maybe we're a little cynical and jaded about it all, but a lot of times as a case takes a long time to get through the system, witnesses will move or pass away, or police officers will retire. There's really no downside for a defense attorney to extend a case other than unless their defendant is in custody. And in this case, this is uncommon for somebody charged with two Class B felonies. These are 10 to 20 years each, violent time, personal robberies involving a firearm, and the court just let his family sign him out, to which about 4 months later he responded with another theft. I guess he didn't have time to steal a gun this time, but, you know, another theft just like the ones he did, and he went back into custody. In this particular case, the psychological evaluation, that's something that happens with increasing frequency. And I have no doubt, I mean, in my case, though, there are some people that clearly have mental issues. I am also of the opinion that sometimes that the psychological evaluation is used as a way to get some more time to do other things in a case. In this particular case, I think there was a kind of a new issue as far as not the standard psychological evaluation, but I think the defense attorney was trying to bring up a relatively new issue.
Right. We all know what our Miranda rights are. Those are the rights that you hear on television. You have the right to remain silent. You don't have to talk to the police, those sorts of things that you hear on all those TV shows. There is a new test that came out during the pendency of Mr. Russell's case that basically tests their ability to understand those Miranda rights. And it looks at the language that the police officers use, the IQ of the defendant, whether they've been through the system before. So his defense attorney had him evaluated for that type of test. And the doctor who did it, that was hired by the defense, actually found that Mr. Russell clearly understood what he was telling. And our police know that issue, particularly when they talk to someone. They don't just read big words or whatever. They really take the time, particularly the detectives in the cases, to use the language that they think a person with whom they are speaking would know.
To make sure they understand.
Absolutely.
Right.
And they have been doing that for years in Lexington, so that isn't anything that was of particular significance in this case, because our officers know with whom they're dealing and they know how to accommodate those, that language or that understanding, to the people with whom they speak.
So you said that a couple of days before ready to go to trial, he pleaded guilty.
Yes.
Where is he now, and when does he finish doing it?
He was finally sentenced, I think last week, and he got 15 years. Part of that will be violent offender time, meaning he'll have to serve 85% of that before he will be eligible to be released. So he is now in the custody of the Department of Corrections.
I looked it up. Physically, he's still at the detention center here, and they have not computed his sentence date yet.
No.
But it'll be the robbery first degree with the firearm is what we call a violent crime. He'll serve 85% of that on top of what he pled to for his other crimes. This was a case, you know, in discussing some of the legal maneuvering that was going on by the defense. At the sentencing hearing, I think there was some more games that they tried to play. And if we have enough time, I'd like to talk about that briefly.
Let's get to that if we can after the break. We also want to talk about how to keep yourself safe when you're doing this kind of transaction, to keep from becoming a victim of this kind of fellow, because there's more than just him out there looking for this kind of opportunity. Dan Laren and Andrea Mattingly Williams from the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, and we'll probably bring Franz Wolf back in. You never know. He seems to be pretty relaxed and comfy, not right now. So we'll just see. Our last segment coming up here on Newstalk 590 WVLK, where it is 9:47, and that is to wrap this up on this Forensic Friday. We've been talking about a Craigslist robber, and so in the time we've got left, I want to talk about things we can do, especially if we're doing business on Craigslist or any kind of, some of the other places online or have a few protections built in, but Craigslist especially seems to have some problems associated with the transactions that happen there. We're going to turn to Detective Franz Wolf. What can you give us in terms of tips for protecting ourselves when we're taking part in a sale or a purchase on Craigslist?
Yeah, obviously Craigslist is a reputable business and a good way to sell and buy items. However, I believe that the general public needs to realize that there are those people out there that are going to try to take advantage of you when you are making these transactions. I personally know a lot of people that meet in parking lots at Walmart or Kroger and make these transactions, and it makes me nervous when they tell me about it. I think you need to realize that the person you're going to meet, you don't know this person, and you need to put yourself in an environment that is safe to meet an unknown person, such as what comes to mind first is like the parking lot at a fire station, a 24-hour place where there are people there that can assist you if the person you're meeting is not there solely to sell you an item or there to commit a crime. I think common sense is just the word that you need to keep in mind and realize that people, And the law-abiding public needs to realize that, that there are those people out there that will take advantage of you and just use common sense when meeting people under these circumstances.
Franz Wolf, good to see you again. Andrew Mattingly-Williams, Dan Laren from the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, thanks for coming in. And, of course, next week we'll have another batch from over there come in talking about another case right here on News Talk 590 WVLK. Stick around. Live with Lee is next, and then Cruiser and Crew, and then Michael Savage on News Talk 590 WVLK. Lee.